From Feature Story News in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Kevin McAleese. On today's programme, Get Out! Germany moves to expel the top US intelligence official in Berlin in the latest dramatic twist in a long-running spy dispute between the two allies.
There was sort of the suggestion that perhaps this expulsion could have been avoided, but the Americans weren't as willing to work as closely with their supposed ally to get to the bottom of this.
Also today, the emergency law allowing police to continue monitoring phone and internet records of the British public. And senators consider President Obama's multi-billion dollar request to address the southwest border crisis.
Remember, those kids are victims. Our only focus should be the best interest to the child.
That's coming up on FSN Reports after our latest summary of the day's headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Simon Marks. The German government has ordered a CIA official to leave the country after two cases of alleged espionage by the United States in Germany. The official is reportedly the CIA's head of station at the US Embassy in Berlin. His expulsion was ordered 24 hours after the disclosure that a German intelligence official was arrested last week and accused of acting as a double agent. At the White House, spokesman Josh Earnest.
Any sort of comment on any purported intelligence activity would place at risk U.S. assets, U.S. personnel, and United States national security. So I'm just not in a position to comment on it.
James Blitz of the Financial Times says the incident is deeply damaging to U.S.-German relations.
Here you have another example of how the U.S. is spying upon a country which is supposed to be a very close NATO ally and which is led by somebody who's widely seen as the most powerful figure in Europe.
Palestinian officials claim another 20 people have been killed by Israel as it intensifies airstrikes on the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian president Mahmoud Abbas is accusing Israel of genocide through what he called an indiscriminate bombing campaign. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says the military assault is not over yet because Hamas has not stopped firing rockets at Israeli territory. Chinese computer hackers tried to break into a U.S. government network in an attempt to secure information about employees being considered for top-level security clearances. Secretary of State John Kerry in Beijing told reporters he learned of the details of the attack too late to raise it with Chinese officials during talks, but he says the general issue of cyber espionage was on the table.
I emphasized that incidents of cyber theft have harmed our businesses and threatened our nation's competitiveness. And we believe it is essential to continue the discussions in this area.
Over a million public sector workers spent Thursday on strike in Britain over pay, pensions and job losses. Prime Minister David Cameron criticised the walkout. He promised to draft new legislation against the kind of strike being led by Labour leaders like Nick McCarthy of the Public and Commercial Services Union.
What we want to demonstrate today to impose a pay freeze on people across the economy and in the public sector. We don't believe it's fair and we don't believe it's necessary.
Argentina and Germany are making their final preparations ahead of Sunday's World Cup final in Brazil. Henry Winter, football correspondent for Britain's Daily Telegraph, says Argentina's captain, Lionel Messi, could be on the brink of being recognised as one of the game's greatest historic figures.
He's won four Ballon d'Ors, he's won Champions League finals, he's even won the Olympic final, the Olympic gold. But this is the World Cup final, this is the pinnacle, this is the pantheon.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. Italian authorities say the Costa Concordia cruise ship is set to be refloated and towed away for scrap next week, 2.5 years after it capsized off the island of Giglio. 32 people died when the luxury liner struck a rock in January 2012, and the ship's captain is on trial for manslaughter. From FSN's bureau in Rome, Yelena Cassis reports.
On Monday, the Costa Concordia is set to rise out of the water and be towed away to its final resting place in a Genoa scrapyard. Engineers have tied huge tanks to the sides, and weather permitting, the operation is ready to go. 32 people died when the cruise ship hit a rock off the Italian island of Giglio on January 13, 2012. Captain Francesco Schettino is currently on trial for manslaughter, causing a shipwreck and abandoning the vessel. The wreck was hoisted upright last September in a 19-hour operation. The salvage is the biggest ever attempted of a passenger ship, and has cost hundreds of millions of euros.
The European Court of Justice says designer drugs which replicate the effects of marijuana may not be classed as medicinal products. Countries across the EU are battling to control the sales of so-called legal highs, which have seen a huge surge in popularity. From FSN's Europe desk in Brussels, Jack Parrock reports.
The German federal court referred a case regarding the sale of these drugs to the European Court of Justice after it convicted two sellers for touting them as medicinal products. The ECJ agreed with the German court that these products couldn't be defined in that way, and this ruling will now be binding across the European Union. It means no drugs will be able to be sold as medicinal products unless they have undergone specific scientific trials. This could greatly diminish the recent upward trend in the sales of legal highs, as the process can take years.
And that is the latest Feature Story News. Simon Marks reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kevin McAleese. Welcome to FSN Reports. Germany is expelling the top US intelligence official in Berlin in the latest dramatic twist in a long-running espionage dispute between the two allies. The move comes amid two cases of suspected US spying in Germany over the past week and earlier allegations the NSA monitored Angela Merkel's cell phone. The German leader today described spying on allies as a waste of energy. Ira Spitzer is in the German capital and has been following the story for FSN.
Well, the German government has decided to expel a senior U.S. intelligence official from Germany as a result of the fallout from the two alleged spy incidents that have dominated the German political and media landscape for the past week. The first was an employee of the BND, that's Germany's foreign intelligence agency, and the second was a member of the German military, and both are alleged to have spied for the United States. So the German public was pretty much demanding some sort of response, and today they got that response. In the statement made, the Germans did make it clear that they felt the Americans weren't as cooperative as they would have liked in sort of helping them figure out exactly what had been happening. So there was sort of the suggestion that perhaps this expulsion could have been avoided, but the Americans weren't as willing to work as closely with their supposed ally to get to the bottom of this. And perhaps adding insult to injury, the Germans have made the suggestion also that the intelligence that the U.S., that they believe the U.S. obtained through these two operatives was very low-level intelligence. The German Interior Minister called it third-rate intelligence, but of course the political fallout is very serious. So it seems to be, at least as we understand it now, almost a tactical error for the United States. They've put themselves in this, you know, somewhat embarrassing situation. They've angered the German public, and there doesn't really seem to be any reason for it, except maybe that that's just what they're accustomed to doing with their intelligence. So, not a great day for the Americans.
And Ira, it's been a rocky period for relations between Washington and Berlin in general. Can you give us a bit more background?
Well, this whole thing started last summer with the revelations based on the leaks of Edward Snowden, that's the former contractor for the National Security Agency, or NSA, the revelations that the Americans were conducting some mass surveillance on German citizens, including tapping the cell phone of Angela Merkel. So that was a huge story in Germany, a very disturbing story in Germany. People here with memories of both the East German, the Stasi surveillance, as well as the Nazis. So there's definitely kind of a visceral reaction among Germans to this sort of surveillance thing, not helped by the fact that it was the United States who, you know, many Germans perceive as sort of a big brother type of relationship anyways. So that story may have died down a little bit in the U.S., but it didn't die down here. And when these new revelations came up in the last week, you know, people were just immediately up in arms and saying, even as we investigate what happened last summer, they continue to spy on us. So, you know, at least in terms of the public perception of the relationship between Germany and the United States, it has been rocky. Of course, the two countries are major allies in lots of world issues. So this does perhaps set them back quite a bit, because any dialogue between the two countries in the near-term future will kind of have this surveillance thing hanging over its head and this diplomatic incident hanging over the head of the two countries. So we'll have to see what the next steps are, whether it's over or whether we'll find out any more developments in these very interesting cases.
Ira Spitzer in Berlin. This is FSN Reports. The death toll is mounting as Israel continues to intensify airstrikes on the Gaza Strip. Palestinian officials said today at least 76 people have been killed, scores of them civilians, as Egypt opened its border to help treat the growing number of injured. UN Secretary-General Ban Ki-moon urged Israel to show restraint and condemned the rocket attacks on Gaza.
This is a time for justice, not for revenge. It's a time for statesmanship and wisdom.
Violence between the two sides erupted after three Jewish students were killed last month and a Palestinian teen was murdered in a suspected revenge attack. Rosemary Hollis, Professor of Middle East Studies at City University London, spoke to LBC Radio's Lisa Aziz.
Well, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has called on the international community, we know, and the UN to provide, he says, international protection for our people. Do you see that happening following that UN meeting later?
I do see the likelihood of some international mediation increasing because we've been here before with at least two rounds of hot warfare between the Israelis and the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip in the last 4 or 5 years. And what happens is that each time Hamas is more daring with its rockets and it has improved its technology somewhat and it is determined to demonstrate that the Israelis must pay a price for their treatment of the Palestinians, both in the West Bank and Gaza. And on the Israeli side, they have been and remain determined that they will show Hamas that it will hurt them more to take this approach and that they will continue with the bombardment until either stopped by the international community or the Palestinians beg for mercy and say, OK, we'll stop the rockets.
Clearly an escalating situation, Rosemary, a serious one. Just on that point, though, Israel saying the operation against Hamas is going to only expand in the coming days and the price the organisation will pay will be very high. I mean, that doesn't particularly sound like they are in the mood to compromise.
No, indeed. But again, we have also been here before, that the threat is that they will not stop short at bombardment from the air and the sea. They will send in troops on the ground. Now, they themselves will take casualties if they do that, send in troops on the ground, and will have to be very heavy-handed in order for their troops searching house to house in pursuit of those Hamas members that they say they want. They will have to be heavy-handed in order to try to avoid casualties on the ground. It gets bloodier and nastier. And down the line, the idea that even a temporary reoccupation of the Gaza Strip, which is currently sealed off under a blockade but not occupied downtown, a reoccupation of the Gaza Strip is not a long-term solution to the conflict between the Israelis and the Palestinians.
Rosemary Hollis, Professor of Middle East Studies at City University, London. Now, Iraq's government says militants have seized nuclear materials from a university in the northern city of Mosul. The UN nuclear watchdog said the material was low grade and posed little risk. However, the fact remains that Islamist extremists, ISIS, are continuing to make gains, prompting government forces to ramp up security efforts against the offensive. Ruth Sherlock, a reporter with the Daily Telegraph newspaper, is in the Iraqi city of Najaf, where volunteers are being recruited to counter the jihadi threat.
These are Iraqi volunteers who have signed up to fight against the Islamic State, now the best equipped and best funded jihadist group in the world. At this military base in the south of the country, the men are being prepared for battle. Most of the volunteers are construction workers, students and restaurant waiters with no experience of war. In scorching 50-degree heat, they brandish plastic guns, practice dashing for cover or crawling forward to ambush the enemy. Iraq's commanders are boastful of the fearsome might of their new recruits, but the men's training is rudimentary and short. It lasts just 2 weeks. After this, some will be sent to defend their neighbourhoods, whilst others are being dispatched straight to the front line. Tens of thousands of Shia men have answered a call from Iraq's political and religious leaders to fight in what is increasingly a war between two sectarian sides. The Sunni Islamists of the Islamic State couple their violently anti-Shia rhetoric with propaganda videos showing the destruction of the religion's holy sites. The jihadists have now threatened to strike the Imam Ali Shrine in Najaf. The shrine is one of Shia Islam's most sacred places of worship. Pilgrims travel tens of thousands of miles to visit the Golden Dome Mosque, and relatives bring their deceased loved ones here for a final blessing before burial. Already, some of the young military volunteers have become the casualties of the new war. This cemetery is filled with the graves of young Shia men who died fighting in the name of religion in Iraq and in neighbouring Syria. As fresh recruits are dispatched to defend their terrain against the jihadists, there are likely to be many more.
Ruth Sherlock from the Iraqi city of Najaf. Now, President Obama says the majority of unaccompanied migrant children crossing the southwest border will not be able to stay in the US. He said people illegally crossing would be apprehended in large numbers, and the government is working to make sure they'll be housed and processed appropriately. Tens of thousands of minors are flooding into the US from Honduras, Guatemala and El Salvador. The president's comments came after a meeting with Texas Governor Rick Perry about the influx, where the president responded to criticism over his decision not to visit the border.
This isn't theater. This is a problem. I'm not interested in photo ops. I'm interested in solving a problem.
Mr. Obama has asked Congress for $3.7 billion in extra funding to tackle the crisis. Earlier today, our Washington correspondent Andrea Arenas spoke to Executive Director of CASA de Maryland, an NGO that protects the rights of immigrants. Gustavo Torres began by explaining the outcome of President Obama's meeting in Texas.
I don't think that was any deal. I mean, the deal is that the Congress need to approve the package that President Obama announced a couple of days ago, almost $4 billion to try to resolve the crisis in the border. And I believe that it still is not there. The Republican Party is now playing politics with that issue, as always. And I believe that it's a big, big mistake. Related with the package, we have some concerns about the entire package, which is another situation, but it still is not a deal. About the package, we believe that it's very, very important that President Obama provide adequate assurance that the children will have legal representation. Remember, he only included $15 million in legal representation for more than 50,000 kids. That is not the real number. I think that it's probably going to be 10 times more than only $15 million. Remember, those kids are victims. Our only focus should be the best interest to the child, no politics in this. And I don't see any agreements between the Governor Perry and President Obama in that direction.
What is your reaction and that of the Hispanic community to President Obama saying that he will move forward to speed up the process to deport unaccompanied minors?
We are very disappointed with that statement from President Obama. He is more like focused on a quicker deportation machine versus the humane treatment that we need to provide to those kids. From my viewpoint, that is a huge embarrassment for our country. Remember that we are creating this crisis because our U.S. policy in Central America is a failure. We have been deporting gang members from L.A. and another part of the country to Central America, and they are organizing them right over there in Central America. We support the coup in Honduras back to 3.5 years ago, and that created violence for 300% more. So we have been creating the problems that Central Americans are facing right now. So we have a big responsibility to help resolve that crisis.
Gustavo Torres with FSN's Latin America Affairs correspondent Andrea Arenas. Now, an emergency law is being passed in the UK to allow police and security services to continue to monitor the phone and internet records of the British public. The controversial legislation is being rushed through the British Parliament after the European Court of Justice struck down existing powers, which made phone companies store when and who their companies called, texted and emailed. But ministers say these powers are vital to maintain national security. Our UK correspondent Dan Whitehead reports.
Calls, text messages and internet records all will be stored by web and phone companies for 12 months after the British government tabled an emergency law. The legislation is being rushed through after the European Court of Justice struck down existing powers ensuring companies stored that communication data, claiming there was a lack of necessary safeguards. The government denies that, with the Prime Minister David Cameron saying this is about maintaining existing capabilities.
Failure to act now would fundamentally undermine our capability to counter a range of threats to the safety of our citizens, and I will not stand by and let that happen. So we're going to introduce emergency legislation to preserve these two vital capabilities. First, the capability for telephone and internet companies in the UK to retain data on who contacted who, when and where, essential to so many prosecutions at the heart of our criminal justice system. And second, the capability for such companies who offer services to UK customers to assist in specific UK national security or criminal investigations, regardless of where in the world these companies are based.
The government says this law must be rushed through in order to maintain national security. But many say if it's that urgent, then now is the time to have a full discussion over just how the government and security agencies such as MI5 monitor the British public. The government tried to introduce even tougher surveillance measures a while back, including a database of websites visited by every UK citizen, but it was blocked by other politicians. Rachel Robinson from the campaign group Liberty says this rushed decision is yet another move towards that so-called snooper's charter.
An issue which has such serious civil liberties implications deserves full and proper parliamentary scrutiny, not the day of rushed procedure that we're going to get with this bill. That is, it's actually a travesty to our democracy.
This emergency law will likely come into effect next week, but ends in 2016, after next year's general election. Parties have agreed a full and wider discussion about communication monitoring will then be held. Dan Whitehead, London.
And finally tonight, FSN Spotlight. And with that, here's Simon Marks.
On FSN Spotlight today, the man who might be Indonesia's next president. The White House yesterday congratulated Indonesians on their election this week, an historic event because it will see the first peaceful transition in power from one elected government to another. 187 million voters were registered to take part in the elections, spread out across the 18,000 separate islands that comprise the archipelago nation. There were two candidates, and both are currently claiming victory. They won't know for certain who won until July the 22nd. The election pitted former Army General Prabowo Subianto, a man with impeccable ties to Indonesia's last dictator, General Suharto, against Joko Widodo, the governor of Jakarta. Mr. Widodo is presumed to be Washington's favoured candidate for the presidency. He doesn't have a blemished human rights record like his opponent, but he has campaigned as a man of the people, eager to usher a new era into the country. Kenji Hall is the Tokyo correspondent for the London-based Monocle magazine. And earlier this year, he spent 2 days on the campaign trail with Mr. Widodo. He spoke this week to Monocle's Phil Han and Victoria Graham.
I spent about a day and a half with Jokowi. We made unscheduled visits to flood victims, and we attended a couple of ceremonies. And then on the second day, I bicycled to City Hall from his official residence with him and a few dozen others. You know, everything about the time I spent with him made him feel very, very approachable. People on the street would shout his name as we drove by. And when we stopped, crowds of people would come up and shake his hand or place his hand on their foreheads in a show of respect. At City Hall, he has an open door policy. Every morning, a line of people form outside of his office, and you know, and they'd be shown to a room where they could air their grievances, usually with an aide, but sometimes with Jokowi himself. While I was there, there was a woman who asked about public housing for her son by actually stopping Jokowi as he left his office to get into his car. And, you know, it was interesting because he actually stopped, listened to her, and told her he'd take care of it by the following morning. And so, you know, these are some of the things that have made him really seem a man of the people.
He does seem like a very pleasant gentleman from everything I've heard and what you're saying as well, Kenji. But there are many issues at stake here, and Indonesia does need a strong leader with a proven track record. Is he strong enough?
That's a very good question. It's really hard to say for sure right now whether he'll be the leader that Indonesia needs. Obviously, Indonesia is facing some economic difficulties at the moment, and you know there are things like its trade deficit. It needs to attract more investment, and economic reforms are needed.
So I've been making some comparisons between Widodo and President Barack Obama, saying that not only do they look a little bit similar, but their election campaigns have been very similar as well. I mean, 2012 being a very significant year for both of them.
Definitely. That was one of the things that struck me when I first met him, was just how much he resembled Barack Obama in appearance. And also in the careful way that he spoke. You know, at the time when I met him, he still had not declared that he would run for president. And when I constantly asked him questions about, you know, his interest in becoming president, he was very, very careful about saying, you know, I'm more interested in running Jakarta right now. This is where my focus lies. He also actually turned down an invitation to speak at Davos. And that was because at the time, Jakarta was going through some serious flooding, and he felt that he needed to be in Jakarta, on the ground, dealing with the problems. And so, you know, he's made a conscious choice to try to step away from that sort of stardom, and yet he can't help being a star.
And just finally, Kenji, if I may ask, I mean, Joko Widodo has made a trip to Mecca recently, and religion has played a big part in this election. There's been quite a big smear campaign against Joko Widodo, hasn't there?
Yeah, there has. He's been accused of being a Christian instead of a practicing Muslim, which he actually is. On the day when I visited after the bike ride, he actually took time away from work to go to Friday prayers, which are held every Friday at City Hall in the lobby and just outside the lobby. And so he's made a very strong point of saying, you know, this is my religion, but he's done it very quietly as well. He hasn't tried to, he's actually been considered very conciliatory in that he chose a practicing Christian to be his deputy in Jakarta.
That's Kenji Hall, Tokyo correspondent for the London-based Monocle magazine. You can find his reporting online at monocle.com. And you can hear lots more of Monocle's reporting on the online radio station Monocle 24. Again, it's all at monocle.com.
With FSN Spotlight, I'm Simon Marks.
And that's the Thursday edition of FSN Reports. You can tell us what you think of the programme by emailing us at reports@featurestory.com. That's reports@featurestory.com. And you can always follow us on Twitter. We're there at Feature Story. But for now, I'm Kevin McAleese in Washington alongside Simon Marks with The Bulletin. For everyone with Feature Story news everywhere, have a great evening. Goodbye.